Thank you very much for coming. I apologize for my late timing. A completely unnecessary crisis was created for the at-large advisory committee and couldn't be ignored. I'm sorry, I was wondering where the music was coming from. I forgot where we are. It's to tell me I'm 15 minutes late. Thank you, Chuck. You said you'd sit here quietly. We welcome your comments, snarky or not. Welcome to the post-expiration domain name recovery PDP initial report information and consultation session, and I said that all with no errors. Can we have the first slide? Can we have the next slide? I can't read that at all. No. With these glasses, I can read that.
Presentation mode?
No. And then answer the screen. You can go over there. I'll have to pull up the door. But I don't see the questions. Can you read it like that, Alan? Yeah, I can read it. Okay. How many people here are new to this group? That is, you're not actually part of the working group and participating. One. Okay.
I'm behind you.
And a whole bunch of people behind me. Okay, so we will go over the background. Sorry, Chuck?
No.
Okay. The rationale for the PDP was a request for an issues report from the at-large advisory committee with the issue of what happens to registrations if the registrant does not renew prior to the expiration date. Now, we know that a registrant who is being alert and trying to make sure their domain name is continued will renew. However, if they don't, the question is what exactly happens. The PDP was started in, the original request was made, I guess, in late 2008. The PDP process working group was started in 2009. The challenge for the group is to look at the questions that were identified within the charter set out by the GNSO and come up with recommendations, primarily best practices or consensus policy, as to address the problems as they are determined by the working group. Can we go ahead to the next one, please? Okay. The composition of the working group is somewhat important in that since it is a working group looking particularly at how registrars handle certain issues and the impact on registrants, there clearly is a large interest in registrars in participating. The other groups within ICANN have not been nearly as responsive in participating as one would have hoped they would be. And therefore, there is a predominance of registrars on the working group, which makes it a little bit more difficult sometimes to have the discussions with representation of all the issues. Go ahead. Right. The first part of the work that the working group did was to survey a number of the largest registrars and try to understand exactly what the policies were and what the practices were regarding post-expiration. We also looked at compliance and then did two different surveys of the working group to try to understand exactly where we would be going in the future. And is the next slide on the survey?
Yeah.
On the first survey? Okay. Yeah. So the registrar survey, the objective was to understand what happens and to understand what the contracts say. The survey covered the top 9 registrars and comprised about 2/3 of all registrations. It was complex because different registries do things in different way, and clearly there are a lot of business models among the registrars. We did identify a number of issues a number of, I guess not issues necessarily, but information, data along the way. The first is that all of the registrars surveyed, according to their practices, provide some level of recovery for domain names post-expiration. Typically, the prices are not published ahead of time. They vary sometimes over time. They may or may not vary from the cost of expiration, a cost of renewal prior to expiration. There are a number of practices which allow domains to be sold, auctioned, transferred, without the registrant's name. But nevertheless, all the registrars surveyed do provide some level of redemption of recovery in that period. Registration agreements, however, tend to universally say that the registrar is under no obligation to do that. I think we can go ahead. So we struggled for a long time to try to identify how to go forward. One of the real problems in this issue, in this area, is that there is very, very little hard data. There is some information from compliance about complaints that they get, but the complaint forms that are filled out were not necessarily tailored for us to get the data we wanted, because people can answer things in a variety of ways. For compliance to do a more detailed analysis actually requires going through huge piles of paper, and we have been reluctant to ask for that level of information. And of course, the registrars, who are in a position to theoretically in any case give us data on how many domains are renewed at what point in their various lifetimes, it's potentially a large amount of effort for them to do that, and there are competitive issues where it's not clear that they want to reveal this information. So we haven't been able to get a lot of hard data. Nevertheless, we went through and tried to start understanding what the possible options are to go forward. The charter explicitly identified outcomes of either policy or best practice. The concept of a best practice within the registrar community is not a well-defined term. And if you, for instance, contrast it to the registry world, where the registries are protected from some legal actions, they have safe harbors if they follow best practices. Registrars are not, there's not a position, not a a comparable situation. And a best practice, to a large extent, is simply an optional thing the registrar can do, should they choose, with no implications of not following them. Because there's no real way to distribute the concept of that it's a best practice, or even identify that it is, from the registrant's point of view. Yes?
I know I said I wouldn't interfere, but what safe harbors do registries have? I'm not aware of what you're talking about.
That statement has certainly made a lot during the intellectual property discussions, that registrars are immune from liabilities if they have taken reasonable actions and followed reasonable procedure, such as clearing houses or the procedures which give people fair access to domains.
So you're talking about the new GTLD process.
Or the launching of any other previous ones.
Yeah. Well, the other ones, to the extent that we're following direction that we have to follow in our agreements with ICANN, which I think is a similar situation with registrars, they can correct me if I'm wrong on that. Yeah, there's some protection there, and we can fall back on that. But with regard to best practices, I'm not aware of any safe harbor for registries either. So
I can direct you to the registries who have said that. To be honest, I'm echoing, but we can talk offline about it. Yes. Tim?
Maybe it's just a bit of a misunderstanding, but in U.S. law, Internet service providers are often exempted from liability if they've taken certain actions when notified of certain things. So I don't know if it's necessarily directly best practices, but that's likely what they're referring to. And I think there's similar things in other international laws or other settings.
Yeah, I mean, the specific example place this kind of thing came up is in during the STI discussions, that is the recent trademark discussions, the group we had a while ago, that if something is recommended as a best practice and a registry does not follow it, then they could be deemed to not have taken all reasonable precautions to prevent harm. Yeah.
Michele speaking. Just in speaking to Tim's point, under European law, there is the concept of mere conduit status. Don't look at me like that.
I don't know if you swore at me or said something nice.
Ah, now, Alan, come on. Now, we do lock heads from time to time, but I've never actually sworn at you, at least not directly.
No. Could you define the term, please?
The basic concept is that under the, I think it's the European E-Commerce Directive, and it's been implemented into national laws under various different guises, that ISPs and hosting providers are given a blanket of protection because we do not knowingly know, which means, sorry, it's a bit of a horrible sentence, but if I don't know about something, you cannot reasonably expect me to stop it. Once I'm put on notice of it, then I have to take an action. So, for example, if you were to have a hosting account with me and you were to upload some copyright files or whatever, nobody can come along and say, oh, you should have taken that down, you should have stopped that action, because I have no way of knowing about it. But once you tell me about it, then I have to do something.
Thank you, Michele. I'm not sure it really matters whether the registries do or do not have safety from best practices. The point I was trying to make is that in the case of registrars, there is no association. Can I finish? She really wants to talk. As soon as I finish the sentence, there is no association of registrars who will say you get our seal of approval if you follow our best practices. And therefore, they're not something that can really impact the registrant. Wendy,
I didn't hear the beginning of this discussion, so I hesitate to jump in. But what I heard at the end didn't sound like what I know of U.S. law relating to secondary liability. And so, if this is an important point, that there's more to add. All right, thanks.
The point I was trying to make is establishing something as a best practice in the environment that we have today does not really make it a lot more likely to happen than simply whispering it in people's ears and saying it would be nice if you do it. The survey looked at a number of issues on whether things should be, what should be available, and to what extent they should be mandatory or not. We found when we did the first survey that we had inadvertently asked a number of questions with answers that were, in some cases, suggesting things that were not implementable at all. In other cases, the wording had been less than clear to all the work group participants, and these are people who are active in the work group. And so we decided to recraft the survey and do it a second time. Marika? The survey looked at a number of specific issues, and we'll go into some of them in more detail. We looked at should there be the ability to recover the domain name, to renew the domain name, and for how long. What kind of information does the registrant get prior to and post-expiration in terms of the fact that expiration is coming? Whether they can reasonably understand ahead of time what the rules will be based on the website, if there is one, based on the registration agreements, if can they predict prices ahead of time, And lastly, there is a current provision that was implemented in the early 2000s that if a domain name gets deleted, a registry may have a offer a service that is called the redemption grace period. That is, when the domain is deleted, it essentially goes dark for a month, and it can be covered. It can be recovered through the registrant of record by the registrant. Although it was implemented by all of the registries at the time it was decided, it has since been implemented by a number of the unsponsored registries, not all of them, though, certainly by all of the large ones. It has not been implemented by all of the sponsored GTLDs, and if one can predict history, it probably will not be implemented by any or many of the new GTLDs that come into being. In addition, because it is not a consensus policy, a registrar may choose to not offer it. It's not clear why one would, but we're told there are some. And therefore, even if a domain is being held in abeyance by the registry, it may not be possible for a registrant to get it back. There are also some subtleties of, because registration agreements allow a registrar to change who is information after expiration, it may be possible that, again, the domain has been deleted, but the original registrant does not show up in Whois, and therefore the registry has no evidence of who the registrant was and therefore can't recover. Yes?
Just a point of information. In a thin registry, the registry won't know anything about the registrant anyway.
Other than through the registrar?
No. The registry operator, if there's one sitting beside you, mm-hmm. will tell you that he has no knowledge whatsoever of who the registrant was, and it wouldn't need to.
Marika, please.
This is Marika, because one of the other points made in that context was as well that the gaining registrar is the one who makes the request during RGP. In theory, the registrar of record could say, this person is not the registrant that I have because it's different in the Whois data. So in an uncooperative case, in theory, it's what we put on, discuss in the mailing list, that could be a scenario. So maybe not a likely one, but...
What do you mean by gaining registrar during RGP?
When we look at the person that's trying to recover the domain name during RGP. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of the we're talking to transfer issue. But in RGP, I think what we discuss is if a registrant would like to recover their domain name, the registrar, in theory, could say, well, this person is not entitled to recover because he doesn't show up in the Whois data. If changes have been made at the time of expiration.
Right, but Marika, that's right. But just to Michele's point, it's the registrar that makes that decision, not the registry.
Correct.
Okay. And the it's not so much of a Whois issue. The registrar is going to have their own information about that. So Whois is kind of it's the public view of maybe who it should be, but. The registrar has its own records with regard to its customer.
I apologize. I got confused on the transfer issue where that's too many different issues here.
Jeff?
I just want to make sure we're clear.
Somebody make a note.
Yeah. That we're cleared up on that when it comes to RGP, that the Whois has absolutely, it's not a concern. It's not an issue of it. It's up to the registrar, has to make the request to the registry. So if there's a change of the Whois, that... It doesn't affect, that has no effect on the RGP process.
The issue as it has been claimed, and I have never tried to do it myself, so I cannot claim personal experience, is there have been cases where the registrar uses the reason that Jeff Eckhouse's name is no longer listed as the original registrant post-expiration, and therefore Jeff Eckhaus does not have the right to recover it through the RGP. I don't know why a registrar will do that, because they've already lost it at that point, but that statement has been made a number of times. It's not particularly relevant to the discussion, so I'm willing to drop it. Marika, can we go on to the next slide, which is... Can we go on to the ones at the end, which talk about the survey questions in more detail? Okay. The prime question is, should a registrant have the ability to recover after expiration? If so, how long? There was a general consensus that it should have the ability, but there was uniformity in the answers among the registrars that it should be a best practice and not something in the consensus policy, not something in the RA which requires a registrar to do it. Now, I have a bit of trouble of how do you say they have the ability when the registrar can say no, but that is the way the survey has the results of the survey have turned out. The current practices among registrars, according to the survey, is that I think the median time to recover is 40 days. It makes no sense to have it more than 45, because that's the auto-renew grace period provided by the registry. Typically, I think one or two of the nine used a time less than 30 days. Most used a time close to 40 days, and a couple used a time more than 40 days. In terms of the question, I think we divided it in less than 30, greater than 30, and less than 40, and greater than 40. Any questions, comments? I can't see anyone behind me, so if someone...
There's a question.
They'll stop talking once you start.
Okay, good morning to everyone. I'm coming from Macedonia. I would like to draw your attention to one specific point. Maybe you know, maybe you don't. CCTLD for Macedonia was not available until 2008. All domain names were registered under tertial domain names with com.mk. In 2008, CCTLD was allowed for registration for Macedonia, and there was a specific transfer period for the registrant that have registered com.mk domain names. It was allowed in the period of 90 days with priority of these registrants to register their CCTLD domain name, meaning if you have registered COMMK, for example, XX.COMMK, to register only CCTLD, let's say Pepsi.MK. Now, there is a changing policy because Macedonian registrar is MARNET, Macedonian Academic Research Network, and they're imposing a new regulative. I wasn't able to find out where did they found these regulations, but now, which is main question here, if or should a registrant have the ability to renew after the expiration date, they have stipulated that there are two deadlines. First is 60 days after the domain name has expired.
Question: are you talking about domains that are currently registered under the CCTLD or under a GTLD? Because what we're looking at is just GTLDs. CCTLDs do not fall under this policy at all. It's outside of ICANN's scope.
Sorry, but I was just wanted to point your attention to this policy as a reference point. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Okay. Can you tell me, please, how this CC country code registrant registrar imposes this policy? Where they are? They have found these regulations, because they were not able to give me this answer when I was asking this.
I think the answer is the rules that a registrar uses for registering CCTLDs, .mk in this case,
okay,
are made by the CCTLD registry and are done completely without any involvement from ICANN. It's an independent operation.
Completely independent.
Completely okay. independent. They do not have to use ICANN registrars. They may, but they do not have to. And the process is completely independent. Yes, Michele.
Just to answer this gentleman's question, there are two points of reference you could use to find out more about where this came from. One would be the CCNSO, because people there may have spoken to them. And the other place to talk would be to talk to the people in Center, CENTR.org. Okay, that's because that's an organization that deals with a lot of CCTLDs. So maybe, and they are here at the ICANN meeting, so if you can find those people, they might be able to assist you. Unfortunately, we could talk around this for hours, but we don't know.
Okay, sorry for the misunderstanding. Yes.
I mean, typically most CCTLDs have their own website and have complaint processes that you can go through, but I don't yes. know the case specifics of the case
you.
In Macedonia. Okay, I think we basically covered this one as the results of the survey was everyone was positive towards registrants having the right. However, the split in the results were that the user groups tended to say it should be in the policy and therefore mandatory, and the registrars said it should be a best practice, which means it becomes an optional issue, that it's something that they can offer or not. Any other questions on this one or comments? Can we go ahead? Michele, you're...
No,
okay.
Is there anybody dialed in?
Not that I'm aware of. If there's anyone dialed in who is listening and can speak, maybe they'll speak. Do we have an Adobe chat room for this? Is anyone watching it?
Yes. Well, I see that Ron Wickersham is on Adobe Connect. I don't think... Is he in the room? So he might be...
This is Ron Wickersham. Am I on...
Yes, we hear you loud and clear,
Ron. Loud and clear. So please...
Thank you. Okay.
Please speak up if you want to interject anything. Ron is one of those... user-related people on the work group and has been a very active worker in the group. All right. The next question is the next survey group of questions is related to expiration notices. The RAA has a very obtuse reference to notices. Specifically, it says that after the date mentioned in the second notice, the registrar can essentially take some action on the domain. That implies that the registrar has sent out a second notice, which implies the registrar has sent out a first notice. The form of those notices, where they should be sent, how they should be sent, when they should be sent, is completely, the RAA is completely silent. Typically, most registrars use email among other other means, and there's a general perception that many registrars send these notices out weeks or months ahead of time, but the RAA is quite silent on that. the questions in the survey were, should we be explicit about a requirement for notices? How many? Should there be any guidelines as to when they are sent out? There was a little bit of worry about if they're sent out too early, they get ignored. If they're sent out too late, there's no opportunity to really do anything about it. So do we need to provide any guidelines? And should there be any guidance in the RAA as to how to send them out? You know, do we need to say you must use Twitter as a stupid example? The consensus seems to be that there should be some indication in the documentation the registrar provides, either in the contract or elsewhere, what they're going to do, so a registrant has some expectation of knowing what to look for, but we shouldn't be too specific. There was a lot of discussion on why do we think registrants do not respond to these messages. Certainly they range from everything from not understanding them to them being classified as spam to the registrar having an obsolete email address which is no longer being used. So there's a whole range of answers. There's certainly a major education problem in terms of many registrants, and we're talking about the registrants often who simply buy a web hosting agreement, and you know they're not becoming domain investors. They haven't read the 49-page contract in any great detail, and their expectations are different. One of the examples that came up in some discussions I had in another forum is you find people signing up to web hosting agreements which say free domain name. And they actually think they're going to be free, and therefore are rather surprised when someone tries to send them a bill and they ignore it. So this has certainly been an issue with a lot of discussion. Can we go on to the next slide? Are there any questions?
Nope.
Whois has also been a very interesting area. One of the problems is with most of the common GTLDs, the registry provides what is called a 45-day auto-renew grace period. The mechanism is that immediately after expiration, the registry renews the domain for a year from the perspective of the registrar, and typically, but not always, depending on the registry, charges the registrar the fee for that year. So if you look at Whois and are not very knowledgeable on this mechanism, you will look at your expired domain Whois information, and it will say it's renewed for another year already. Now, again, if you're not particularly knowledgeable, you'll say, I guess they charged my credit card, or I guess I renewed it, or I guess I don't have to renew it, or whatever, and think that it's already done. Because Whois is registrar dependent, the format of Whois varies from registrar to registrar, the detailed things for the thin registries, specifically .com and .net, and there is a lot of registrant confusion. This is the only recommendation that we've come up with which is virtually unanimous across registrars and users, that it really needs to be fixed. The users have stories of how people misunderstood, and the registrars are tired of people calling them and saying, what do you mean I owe you money? It says it's renewed. So it looks like that's something that we are going to try to pursue. The exact details of what we recommend are not clear, and we haven't had those discussions yet. The next question is, what happens to a domain after expiration? If you look at the case of a domain which is being used for web access, typically the domain will not no longer resolve to the original website. It will go to a page run by the registrar or someone they contract with. Visually, it will often have pay-per-click references on it. In case of some registrars, it will also have a notice saying this domain has expired. If you are the registrant, do something, do such and such to get it back. The actual practice varies. The amount of time before that page is intercepted varies. There are some registrars who reportedly don't bother changing it for a week or more. There is a general view among the people on the work group, not unanimous, that the best way to get someone's attention is to stop it working. That if they have missed the emails or whatever the notices are, either because they've ignored them or because they didn't get them due to an incorrect email address or spam interception or whatever, then the website not working is perhaps the best way to catch their attention. But there is no consensus policy, no rules to say what the registrar has to do. In terms of other services, in general, if the web is intercepted by the registrar for this kind of flash page, this kind of park page, virtually all other services will also stop working, except mail. It is quite possible, because of the way the DNS handles mail with MX records, which take precedence over the A record that points for a website and other services, that mail can keep on working after the website is intercepted. So it is quite possible, and in fact quite common, for mail to continue working up until the day or the moment that the domain disappears completely and is irretrievably lost. That may not be a major issue for someone who uses mail as an ancillary service on top of the web usage, but there are an untold, very large number of domains that are used purely for mail. So although the registrar is intercepting the port 80 requests, no one's going there because only mail is being used, and it will keep on working until it fails. The general recommendation among most members of the work group, and there are a few exceptions, but generally across the whole work group, is that things should stop working sooner rather than later, as one of the better means of catching the registrant's attention that things are not perfect. Any questions? No questions, no comments. James.
Hi, James from GoDaddy. And Alan, I'm sorry if you already covered this, but when we start to talk about the different services and things that take precedence, and that's all really dependent upon things that are outside of the scope of what a registrar does, which is just essentially link up to a name server, and other registrars and individuals and organizations operate their own name servers and may choose to implement those differently or respond to those requests in a custom or proprietary manner. So I think that what we discussed in the group is that it's hard to predict with a high degree of certainty what's going to happen with DNS resolution services, once you get outside of or beyond the actual zone.
That's true to an extent. It's true that I think the main differentiator is it depends on whether the registrant was originally using a DNS managed by the registrar or a separate one.
Correct. Whether it was a registrar provided service or whether it wasn't. But I guess my point is that the registrar provided DNS services are really kind of not, to my knowledge, not governed by any of this.
Okay.
Just my point that, that's why we're seeing so much variation.
Well, we're seeing variation because very often, registrars do things in different ways, number one. And number two, because of who hosts the DNS for the given registrant will cause the registrar to take different action. if the registrant is using someone else's DNS, the only way the registrar can redirect the port 80 traffic, which most registrars say they do, is to change the entry in the route to point to a different DNS server. And at that point, everything moves over. Yes. Now, if the registrar's DNS is being used by the registrant, then some registrars will not change the overall DNS pointer, but just change the A record associated with it. That will allow email to keep on working. But they could, instead, change the whole DNS record and...
Now, and I need someone a little more technical to jump in here. The registrar isn't sending A records to the registry. There you go.
We have our technical expert.
I'm not claiming to be a technical expert on the DNS, but I'm Thomas Ressler, W3C, have been around these corners for a while. I'm also one of those strange registrants who edit zone files by hand. A lot of what you're doing here is effectively second-guessing the registrant's operation and trying to figure out how within the registrant's operation you can do this or that to this or that service. I suggest that that is an unhealthy pursuit. Think of it on the level of there is a domain name, it maps to a name server, the name server is under the control of the registrant, whatever that name server returns is under the control of the registrant. Whether the registrar might be able to mess around with that is an implementation detail of what the registrant uses. I don't think it is healthy to dive into can we break web traffic while keeping mail traffic alive. If you break an A record and my mail setup has an MX that points at something different and I use that A record to actually retrieve my email, then you have broken my email. There are so many interdependencies that you don't see from the outside unless you're the one who has set up the system. It's just not going to work. Don't go there, please.
With due respect, we are talking about post-expiration where the registrant no longer has control, but the registrar does.
Alan, I think you're misunderstanding his point. This is something that we've been bringing up. What Thomas is saying basically encapsulates it perfectly. The only reason that we even got to discuss this at all is because some people who do not have the technical knowledge keep on asking about it.
I second that motion. Okay. Now I'm confused because I thought there was a general consensus that, including many of the registrars on the group...
Okay, Alan, if you ask me a question, a specific question saying, should X happen, then I will answer the question that I have been asked. So you have asked us, should mail stop working? And my answer will be a categorical yes, because... If I do control the DNS part of it and I do control the other services, then I might have the ability to do something there. But as Thomas rightly pointed out, I shouldn't have even gone near that. But if you ask a question, would it be impolite for us not to answer it?
Is someone here claiming that post expiration, the registrar does not have the ability to redirect the whole domain name to a different DNS server and stop it from working according to what the registrant originally had it?
Not at all. I mean, but the point is that what Thomas said encapsulated it much more neatly, because he stuck it with a simple sorry, my throat's gone. The domain DNS servers, and then everything after DNS servers, and that's...
But if you change the DNS server, you change what happens.
Yes, but the point is that what happens is a detail that we didn't know, we could not know about. Just sticking to the DNS servers is the safest way to deal with it.
What happened before is irrelevant. The question is, can you make it stop working? Well, right now, if I'm managing my own DNS and my registration expires, you will take over, change the zone entry, and you will point it to your own DNS servers. Most registrars will. And then everything will stop working because it no longer points to anything that I wanted. And that was the point of this recommendation, is that we suggest it always be done that way as opposed to just sometimes being done that way.
Yes, but then we started... Yes, I agree entirely. But the thing is, we then started asking all sorts of crazy questions about services that, as I keep... I've been saying for months, that we couldn't have known about. That was the thing. Whereas what Thomas said encapsulated it perfectly for me.
Okay. It does turn out that the other services are moot because everything works off of the A record, I believe, except for mail.
Everything works off the DNS records.
Yes.
There are many DNS records, not just A records, Alan.
I'm sorry. Everything is pointed... Paul.
Thanks, Alan. It's Paul Diaz for Network Solutions. We're going down a rabbit hole. I mean, you've already introduced the majority, vast majority of the working group says, let's turn everything off to get the attention. To Thomas's point, and he made it very well, he was just basically shooting down that vocal minority within the group that wants all sorts of things to keep going no matter what, and just explain, we can't monkey around like that.
Then I suggest we all stop violently agreeing with each other.
Yes, let's
with the
on.
Exception, with the exception, I believe, of one person who wants to see email continue, everyone else says, shut everything off. And we believe the registrars have the ability to do that by changing the thing. Nobody's advocating the semi stuff, or hardly nobody. Yes, please. That's why I says let's stop violently agreeing with each other. Let's move on. Okay, there was general comments, general agreement that things should stop. We may catch someone's attention that way. If they're on a 3-month vacation, tough. We can't fix everything in the world. And may we move on?
No.
Can we kill the lawyer, please?
that was suggested several hundred years ago. I don't know why we're still asking the question.
There's a question there.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Michel Machado. I represent a Brazilian registrar. The only issue that I see is the fact that people are asking for be mandatory turning off all the service. It's true that sometimes the only way that we get to talk to the registrant is turning off the service. But it also happens in our case that we don't turn off the email because it's the way they talk to us. Sometimes they try through the phone, but they also use the email. So we are kind of successful turning off just the www when it's possible, when we have the control of the DNS. But the email is still working since it's used for communication after the website is not working.
The problem has certainly been raised. The problem is there seem to be a larger number of people who do not use that email address, or the registrar's email goes into a spam filter and therefore is not an effective way, but they may still be using it for other email, and they're not getting any warning at all. In any case, in that particular one, we are looking at the possibility of exceptions because there may well be situations where that it is not the appropriate case. But it would seem in the vast majority of cases that is the best way to get people's attention. But we need to look at it further, and perhaps we can talk later. Perhaps you'd like to join our working group.
My issue is just about being mandatory because I see our behavior is adaptation for our market. I'm not against offering the others the possibility to turn off the service. I'm not saying that they cannot do. I just want to be able to be better providing my market.
And do you turn off the web service, though?
Yes.
Okay.
The only reason that we do is if we cannot get a call answered in 2 days.
Okay. And how do you handle it if the DNS is if the registrant's DNS is hosted somewhere else, where you either have to redirect everything or nothing.
No, in that case, I cannot do better. I just change the DNS.
In that case, you turn off everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to mention, they are the minority in our case.
All right. The next one we're looking at in some detail is the redemption grace period. I talked about that a little bit earlier. The question is, should we make it mandatory for registries and registrars? Now, as noted, for many registries right now, it is a voluntary service. But it has been noted that for the registries that have been created since the RGP was first invented, the majority of registries have not implemented it. And I think we can reasonably expect that the majority, if it's not included as a contractual requirement, will not implement it in the upcoming new GTLDs. There was a small majority, certainly not unanimous, but a majority of workgroup members that felt it should be made mandatory. That is, all registries must be forced to do it. And again, there was some discussion of if there is a specific reason due to the business model of the registry why it really does not fit or is not necessary, that certainly there could be a method, you know, the equivalent of an RSTEP request, a funnel request, to not provide it, may be something that could be provided or handled in contractual negotiations. The issue was also raised that for registries that don't really need this because of the way they're operating, it may be an undue expense to have to implement it, but it was pointed out that it doesn't have to be an automated process if it's never used. It can be a purely manual process. Chuck?
So is what you're asking right now, should the RGP be a consensus policy? And if so, consensus policies, and ICANN staff ruled on this several years ago, can't be oriented towards some subset of the registry, registrar community. Now, there can be exceptions, like you were talking about. That's okay, and that's been done because of unique circumstances of a particular TLD. But if the question is should it be a consensus policy, then if it's a consensus policy, then it doesn't apply just to, and correct me, anybody, if I'm wrong on this, it doesn't just apply to registries, but it applies to registrars as well.
There seems to be some debate over that it would be possible to craft a consensus policy that says all registries must offer it, but not all registrars must be forced to. But I don't think that would be the normal.
All I would suggest there, get general counsel's opinion on that, because I think all of us as registries and registrars have requirements in our agreements to implement consensus policies. I just suggest you get that clarity soon rather than later.
Yes. Noted. And we're listening to one of the two people who invented the RGP, so his words are wise. Any other comments on RGP? Now, I will note that that when the RGP was crafted, all domains that expired were deleted eventually. How long it took depended on the specifics of the registrar. The expired domain deletion policy, EDDP, which was enacted in 2004, I believe, required that the registrars do this within 45 days. They could delete immediately after expiration, and a few do, and otherwise they must do it within 45 days. Sorry, I lost the track of where I was going on that one. So let's go on. Sorry. I distracted myself. I think that was the last one in this section. Okay. Now, another of the things we discussed but certainly didn't come to any closure, is the issue of registration agreements being in language which is very difficult to understand, crafted by very good lawyers employed by the registrars. And very often there's wording in the agreements that say things like the registrar may or may not do something, or the registrar may do something at its sole choice, which provides a certain level of uncertainty to the user. There was a fair amount of discussion on should we try to ensure that that information is presented to registrants in ways that are understandable, whether it's through the rewording the agreement or explanatory information peripheral to it. There are words in the RAA right now related to a number of things where it says the registrar must clearly display on its website, if it has one. The word clearly is not defined and is very subjective, and there was certainly a large objection to trying to use those words and have real meaning to them. On the other hand, there are examples around the world of jurisdictions where there are either best practices which are, honored best practices, or laws which say you got to provide very clear statements to the customer. So, and luckily we have Cheryl on the group who's from Australia and spent a good part of her recent career crafting things like that or ensuring that they be crafted, so that there are examples.
This is Mikey. I've got a point of order.
Sure.
We're 20 minutes from the end of the meeting, and I'm bringing this up because I am hosting a meeting in here at 11 o'clock, and I really want to get it started on time. So how close to the end of this summary are you?
About two sentences away.
Good. Thank you.
Our next steps are the report will be formally published. It's available on the web right now, but we will be opening a comment period in July. The comment period will include a form of a questionnaire to solicit input from the general public outside of the working group on a number of the questions, and we will then continue to work and hopefully come to some closure. There are a number of documents, and I'd like to open the floor up to any questions or comments.
I just have a comment. I just got some feedback on the question of RGP and imposing obligations. A consensus policy can impose obligations on registries or registrars or both. So it's a variety is possible in that sense.
Thank you. And the floor is open again. In the absence of any comments from either people on the working group or in this group, I encourage everyone to read the report if you haven't. For those who are not part of the working group, please take the time to participate in the survey we'll be offering. And I know Marika has something to say. And wish us luck.
This is Marika. Maybe as we have many working group members here, maybe just a quick discussion on when we're meeting next and how we're going to move forward on the public comment forum.
Ron, go ahead.
Yes. Is the gentleman, I believe, who was from Brazil, who was concerned about keeping the email alive, still there? I have a question.
Yes,
for
he
him.
Is. I am.
Yes. My question comes from the person, the registrant, has not renewed the domain name and it's expired. So the working email before expiration failed to get his attention. So therefore, if you keep the email working, are you really doing him a service or not? My concern comes that if you keep it working for the entire period, then it reaches a point where it's impossible for him to recover when it finally does quit, and he's not in a position to recover it at all. the earlier you interrupt it following following the expiration, the more time he has to make a correction while he has the right or capability to pay the fee and get it renewed. So do you see the point where trying to be good to him by giving him extended email service may in the end cheat him out of the time to act sufficiently promptly to recover his domain name? Or am I misunderstanding what you're trying to accomplish?
Okay, Ron, there is one other issue that I think I'll add before the gentleman responds. In our slides, we tried to be very brief. The actual detailed question did say that if there is a discussion, a dialogue between the registrant and registrar, that they don't have to shut it down. It's only if you cannot establish any sort of communication that shutting it down is the last resort. But please, if you could respond.
It's correct. If the registrant doesn't try to come up with us, we may have turned off other service. But one thing that I want to make clear here is there are registrar here that are much bigger than us, that have a broader perspective of what the registrant is. Typical registrant for us, it doesn't come to us to ask, I want a domain. It comes to us and say, look, I want a blog with my name. Sometimes I make a few souvenirs and I want to have a store with my name. They never come to us and say, I want a domain, I want a web hosting. They don't come to us asking this kind of thing. They don't even understand. Most of our customers are being trained with videos where they go there, they know what they should put in the forms, how the system should be working, but I cannot expect that they really understand what they are buying. They know what they want. So the way we work is to make sure that we get close to them. So sometimes it's not. I may say that we fail to express to them what the ICANN is, but most of the time they don't want to know. But we want to communicate to them. So sometimes we behave in a way that it's not in the way that it's done in other countries, or even in the registrar in our country, because we want to serve these specific kind of customers. I think that's the main argument that all the registrar expose, saying that every registrar has a business model. Our business model is to talk to people that don't understand ICANN in most of the process.
I think the substantive question that Ron was asking, and I think I'll try to ask directly, is what do you do in the situation where you send a few more emails to this registrant saying you must renew, and they don't respond? You cannot establish a dialogue.
Our team is it's allowed to turn it off. But what I can say that our customers that don't use our DNS or web hosting, they are much more informed, so this doesn't happen to them. The customers that have their own DNS in our case, usually they are well aware what they should be doing.
But we're really focusing on those who don't renew. You try to contact them, they don't respond, and at that point, I think you're saying yes. In those cases, you will turn it off to try to get their attention, and that is the only recommendation here.
I would say that most of the cases are going to be turned off, but I cannot claim that 0% of the cases someone lost their domain. But I can certainly state that they are a very, very small number.
Any other questions? Jeff?
I guess, well, maybe I guess this is to Marika's point, is if you could lay out to Alan or Marika, to the group, what are the next steps in the process and when this the public comment period will begin and end and what will happen after that, and if there are any sort of hard, well, not, you know, the dates around those and what would happen after the closing of the comment period. It would just be the final report would be after that? Okay.
Just on the question of the report, that's one of the questions and I think that was raised in the last discussion we had of the working group. As we don't have any concrete recommendations in this report, the group might want to consider putting out either a, you know, second initial report or a draft final report for another public round of public comments if we have really concrete recommendations that differ very much from, you know, the options that were put forward in this report. So that's something for the group to consider on the, you know, what comes next. And I'll leave it to Anil on the public comment period.
Our intent is to open the public comment period within the next few weeks. We're still trying to settle on what the questions are we're asking in this survey, and that discussion didn't come to closure prior to the meeting, so we're being a little bit vague on it. But the intention is to open it, let's say, in July, hopefully earlier rather than later. It'll be open for a month, typically.
As this is a PDP working group, the bylaws requirement is 20 days. Taking into account, you know, holidays, it would indeed be better sooner rather than later. I guess there's nothing preventing, if we really feel that it's awkward and we don't get responses, that the group does a second public comment period, or we just, you know, do a new one with the same questions. But the bylaw requirement is a 20-day public comment period on the initial report.
I would sort of assume that means no less than 20 days, but probably no prohibition and longer. Or you say 20 and then immediately extend it, which is our norm.
I will need to check that with legal counsel, because we have interpreted in the past as meaning 20 days and that's it. I will need to check if indeed... I mean, on other public comments periods, we do extend, but those are not mandated by the bylaws. So I would need to check, what the guidance is on that.
If you could. Anything else before we close? No. Then I thank you all.
Next meeting? When does the working group want to meet next time?
Didn't we decide not to meet coming Tuesday, but the week after?
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Right. We'll get that set up. Usual time, I presume. It would be the 6th of July would be then the next call.
I think that was right when we decided.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll get a reminder out
not,
to the list.
It's not next Tuesday, but the Tuesday.